Right, this is Pure Decking again for October 31st, 2013. I would go for the whole, you know, messed up, you know, cliched Halloween thing, do the reverb voice and play the organ, except I don't actually know how to play the organ. I have a organ. I just don't. Wow, there's a masturbation joke in there. I was going to refer to a piano. I have a piano. I just have no clue how to play the damn thing. So, you know, so much for the, you know, the harpsichord there or whatever. Oh, that joke just died horribly. I'm Morps. This is a show about stuff that interests me. And tonight I have, are you? Because everybody else is out trick-or-treating, I think. So I'm pretty sure that's where Sard is. He's got his Power Rangers costume on and he's going around asking for candy.
Yeah, he's taking the dog around, man.
So I know you're drinking coffee. I've actually got a Newcastle Brown Ale, which, you know, with trying all the different drinks for the Let's Get Drunk show, I haven't really gotten back to this one, but Newcastle is actually one of my favorite drinks. It's been a long time since I've had it, since I've been buying all this other crap to try on the show.
In certain parts of the world, Newcastle Brown is only drunk by the working class. It's considered your Mexican beer of crap.
Really?
Yeah, I think for Let's Get Drunk, you should try Bovril.
Bovril. I'm not sure I've even seen that.
Yeah, you may have to get one of our probably British listeners could probably send you a bit of Bovril or something like that, man. There we go, yeah. Psychros has got it. Newcastle Brown skinhead beer.
They're making fun of my face. I like Newcastle. I don't care if it's skinhead. Well, I'm going to shave my head eventually anyway, so who cares? All my hair falls out, I'm just going to shave
it. Just make sure when you're glossing someone, you say, stitch that, Jimmy. Just as you smash him in the face with it.
Yeah, but you've told me to never do a British accent again. Yeah. So.
Preferably, I won't be there when you are in the act of smashing a bottle in someone's face.
You'd be there filming it.
Probably be the one taking the bottle to the face.
So, all right. Obviously, we just rebooted the broadcast box, so we'll see how long it makes it, but I'm going to try to get some work in on it this weekend. So if the stream's up and down a little bit, you know, Saturday during the day, nobody panic. If it's down when we try to start IHN, I'll hear about it.
Just bitch at Sard.
Yeah, just yell at Sard. That'll work. I'd just take the stream down and then call Sard. It's down.
You know what? He'd give zero fucks, too. He'd just be like, I'll get to it when I can.
Yep. Goes in there. Well, somebody's deleted Sam and loaded a bunch of strange porn onto the box. Like, yeah, you got to fix that.
So, yeah, that's when you want to talk to Big Brother.
Oh, yeah. It's like, hey, Big, we're playing a prank on Sard. We're going to clone the VM and then replace it. We need some links.
Yeah. Can we have your horse folder, your dog folder, and anything else related?
Big great April Fool's joke. So, anyways, for discussion tonight, so Cisco just bought the video tag in HTML5.
Okay.
Literally. There's been this debate going on back and forth for a couple of years now, actually, about the video, the embedded video tag in the HTML5 spec, specifically what codec are the browsers going to support.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few of them floating around. Of course, all the Linux guys are saying og, and they didn't really get anywhere. Apple and a few others are pushing H.264. And there were even a few open builds of H.264, but the thing with the open builds was that apparently it violated patents, so you couldn't actually distribute the damn things. And Mozilla was going to go with the codec that Google had come out with, which was VP8. And I guess Google themselves decided not to go with VP8 because they put H.264 in Chrome. So what's happened is, now I've got two different links. I've got a link to a GigaOm article, and I despised linking to GigaOm, but it was the most decent write-up of this whole mess I could find. And I've actually got a link to Monty Montgomery's personal live journal, where he's basically complaining that, yeah, Firefox caved in on this. I'm trying to figure out the best way to explain this. Pretty much, whatever codec you ended up using, because most of them are licensed, it's sort of like the old MP3 argument, except everybody ignores the MP3 license these days. MP3 is technically not free. Fraunhofer owns it. Yeah. And you're supposed to pay them if you use the encoder.
Yeah, like everyone buys WinRAR.
Right, exactly. But so what Cisco has done is the way H.264 is licensed, you can play a fat fee for the thing. And it's 6.5 million dollars a year. That's the cap. So Cisco has pretty much said, fine, we're going to pay 6.5 million dollars a year for the license, and then just, you know, put up for free, basically, their SKUs, their binary build of an H.264 decoder. And so Mozilla has agreed they'll grab the Cisco binary blob for H.264 and throw it in Firefox, so Firefox will be able to use H.264 for embedded videos and JavaScript applications that do things like streaming video, stuff like that. And so Cisco has agreed to do this for at least 10 years. So that's $65 million that Cisco
billion.
Has just dropped on this.
Wow.
And
that's commitment, man.
Well, you know, as big as Cisco is, maybe it's not as big as you think. But the thing is, they're talking about in the chat room, it'd be nice if HTML5 had codec agnostic video. It actually does. The video tag can work with a whole bunch of different formats. It's not format specific. The problem is that your browser has to support whatever codec your video's in. So if they don't all support the same codec, you know, you'd have to go get another plugin for things, which means you're back on Flash pretty much. And the whole point of a lot of this is to get away from Flash. But now Monty Montgomery's blog post is pretty interesting because he's pretty much admitting that Mozilla has caved and they're going with a closed standard for their video codec because Cisco's footing the bill.
Okay. Huh? Yeah. All right. So this news here, I'm playing it from just the other side of the fence here, is sure. Just being an average user. How does this make it different for your average home user? Is there anything they have to do now?
Like, actually,
from a
next
point of view, does this actually matter?
Well, from your average user, it's actually kind of nice because it means it's not really going to matter what web browser you're using. Is about mid-2014. All of your web browsers will have this H.264 codec dropped in on them. So, you know, you'll go to YouTube, for example, and it won't run Flash. You'll just use this H.264 codec, and it will be there. And okay. So you're not going to have to screw around with installing other plugins. You're not going to have to deal with funky video formats. It'll just work, which is nice. I mean, that, well, you know, from a user standpoint, it's nice.
Well, that's a win for the user.
Yeah. But for a content developer, it means you have to encode in H.264. So that might be a good thing. That might not be. I mean, everything's going to work. But it also means that Cisco owns these binary blobs. They own this tag. Now, to be fair, Cisco has not been a terrible player when it comes to standards. They've actually been pretty good about it. Their networking gear does a pretty good job of adhering to IP. You can make the Microsoft comparison, where Microsoft says fuck standards and writes their own shit, and because of their market share, everybody ends up, you know, having to conform to Microsoft as well as everything else.
Yeah,
and Cisco has been pretty good about not, you know, you can't. you can hook Cisco gear up to other stuff and it works. Anybody who's ever messed around with hardcore Microsoft networking knows the moment you try to introduce, say, you're using bind for DNS instead of Active Directory, watch Windows lose its shit. So, you know, Cisco's not a bad player out there. I mean, there are certainly worse players out there, especially with standards and some of their gear. They're very pricey, and they're sticklers for their way of working with their gear. You know what I mean? But yeah. they're not exactly the worst of the bunch when it comes to making shit that just works. So, you know, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt on this. It's just interesting to me that Cisco is dropping this absolutely crazy amount of money. Cycros, in China, what happened was they love Cisco so much, they copied their firmware and made their own version of it called Huawei. And I don't know how many people are even going to get that joke.
That is beautiful.
Huawei is the Chinese router manufacturer, and a few people have picked apart their firmwares and figured out they took old Cisco firmware and then developed their stuff from that.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just interesting to me that Cisco has done this. And, you know, you can think of the shady version where it's like, well, they're going to own this video codec and, you know, for their IP telephony stuff. Well, maybe. You know, I kind of wonder if what they're doing is ensuring that there's going to be a market for bigger bandwidth, you know, moving bigger switches on networks pretty much. H.264 videos are not small. They are a bandwidth hog. And I could see Cisco doing this pretty much backing to make sure that there's going to be a new high bandwidth application on the internet in the next couple of years to force ISPs to go out and buy new gear, pretty much creating a market for themselves.
That could be it, man.
I could certainly see them doing that. But, you know, the other thing they could be doing is taking the Microsoft route and taking control of the standards now so they could control it down the road, because they do have, Cisco does have some web video business, video service business, and IP telephony business. So I don't know.
One of the mega corpses will rise, controlling all the information.
That's the thing. I'm still trying to figure out what Cisco's game here is. I mean, it very well could just be they're ensuring they have a market down the road for people to upgrade their gear, because it's, anybody who's worked corporate IT knows it's a nightmare getting people to upgrade their gear. I've still got 10 megabit switches going around we're trying to get rid of. So, I mean, yeah, it's just a budget thing, but
yeah,
you know, some of the Cisco gear ain't cheap either. So,
that's a problem. Maybe they shouldn't be releasing 3 versions of this shit each year, and how about every 2 years or something?
Well, that's not even the problem. The problem is most businesses, you know, they're going to go out and drop couple million dollars in networking infrastructure if they're of size. They don't want to replace that equipment for the next 20 years if they can help it.
Yeah, and, last thing on their business model, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's like, well, it still works. I mean, who cares? It's working. It's not broken, right? So it's like, well, it's not broken, but it's causing a bit of a headache, and we got people bitching, but it's not broken.
But that's what you paid for, man.
Yeah.
That's the argument from upstairs in the boardroom, dude. That's why we pay IT. To fix the problems, man. I don't care the shit's 20 years old.
Yeah, but just make it work. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
We can work harder and longer for less money.
Yeah, that's usually pretty much it. That's it right there in a nutshell. So, I don't know, man. I just found it very interesting to me. I mean, essentially, Cisco did. They bought the video embed tag in HTML5.
I'll go out and buy $100 worth of Cisco stock, and in 10 years' time, it might be worth a shit ton.
Cisco's been around long enough that their stock's pretty stable at this point.
Yeah. So. Well, as you said, they're probably ensuring a future for themselves. They're the only player in the game.
I think Juniper and Checkpoint and even Huawei might have something to say about that. But yeah, I mean, everybody goes to Cisco as kind of the default. It's the old school IBM thing. You don't get fired for choosing Cisco, but it's not cheap.
So yeah.
Half of that is you're paying for that brand.
Well, They've proven themselves, and that's why they are a well-known brand.
They're also one of the earliest players in the game, so...
Well, if they've been around this long, man, it's probably a smart move on their behalf, dumping that amount of money. They can see a future in the investment of it.
Well, that and again, I think there's probably a large chunk of it right there. Is they're just making sure that there's a nice high bandwidth application to get people to upgrade their gear down the road. So, but hey, any company that can take a bunch of 486 chips and slap 100 ports on it and sell it as a Switch, hey man. Yeah, and you might think I'm kidding. I'm actually not. Most of your Cisco gear is running on 486 class chips. They've got them clocked up a little bit higher than what they were in a desktop, but that's essentially what they are. So,
awesome.
All right, let's do current events here. First story up is from scmagazine.com.au. A Melbourne security professional has sent ear-piercing garbage tunes to the top of online music charts by spoofing track plays. Despite the fact that Peter Fillmore has never played an instrument, in a month he has accrued hundreds of thousands of plays for his tunes hosted in online music charts, trumping artists like Pink, Nicki Minaj, Flume, and other chart topper album The Heist, making $1,000 in royalties in the process. He actually called his album The Heist.
Wow.
A now dormant artist account he operated has received nearly 1 million hits. Rather than spend years practicing an instrument and writing songs, he compiled music from clunky electronic MIDI files and later applying algorithms he squashed together public domain audio. So he like opened up FL Studio. Yeah, yeah, I agree with the chat room. Nicki Minaj is not really a...
I wasn't going to get into it because then I'll get angry. It's
what the article says. I'm just reading the article, man. But I just love it. He like opened up FL Studio, grabbed a bunch of random files, headbutted the keyboard a couple of times. He then purchased 3 Amazon Compute instances and wrote a simple bash script to simulate 3 listeners playing his songs 24 hours a day for a month. Fillmore wasn't bothered when online listeners dubbed the tunes rubbish, horrible, and of a quality perhaps only appealing while on cocaine. Yeah, so he didn't even try. He just made a bunch of noise and put it in a track so it'd be original.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Rather, the payment security expert was curious whether fraud detection mechanisms were used across music services like Spotify, Pandora, and CD Baby. I'm not a musician, Fillmore told SC at the RooksCon security event in Melbourne this week, but I keep hearing that artists are going broke and wanted to look into it. As it turns out, you're doing it wrong if you want to make money in music by being a musician. He began to test the services earlier this year by uploading the awful audio to a variety of music streaming services. While Telstra's Moog and Spotify would both ban his account early in his research, Fillmore suspected the crackdowns were not automated. For the former service, his 1,200 plays would have been easily detected as highly repetitive traffic, while Spotify users likely would have reported the apparently popular Let Shrill MIDI tunes to site administrators. Fillmore then compiled the tunes from public domain works using Wolfram Alpha and created an album dubbed Kim Jong Christmas.
I like this guy.
I like this guy, too. Kim Jong Christmas. The new music appeared less obviously fraudulent than the MIDI tunes, but still failed to attract fans despite its fusion of festival carols and blasting 90s techno. That might not have been terrible, actually. Loops, poorly mixed sound resulting in distortion, cheesy, horrible samples. I think the chat room's right. I think he did use LMMS because it comes with a bunch of cheesy samples. It might sound good on cocaine, like when it was made, but this isn't music, one reviewer wrote. There ain't no party like Korean workers' party, but seriously, what the hell is this doing on high
rotation?
There
ain't no party like the Korean workers' party. That is the shit right there. I want that on a t-shirt.
Good picture of Kim Jong-il right above it. Yep.
Yep.
Somebody get Sard and Fox on that. Let's see. For a total cost of about $30, Fillmore was able to gain a slow trickle of royalty payments from the fixed resource pool that was online streaming services used to pay the many thousands of artists for the clicks their tunes generate. His work was possible because he suspected the services lacked automated analysis and instead relied on user reports to detect fraudulent music. Suspension notices said only that his accounts breached terms of service and Fillmore did not receive responses to requests for more details. He said he created an opportunity for artists to DDoS rival musicians off the streaming networks by directing fraudulent clicks from attacker-controlled cloud computing instances to target tracks. An attacker then posing as a listener could then report what appeared as a fraudulent play to the streaming service administrators, who would obscenely suspend the account without providing further information to the victim artist. While the research was a small-scale demonstration designed for Ruxicon, Fillmore said it could have easily been scaled up by adding more cloud compute resources that would generate thousands of dollars in fraudulent royalties. Fillmore had seen only one other would-be muso who appeared to be scamming royalties under the name Scam Artist.
That's brilliant, man. What a great idea.
Yeah, I love this. He just went on Amazon, spun up a couple of cloud instances, and just wrote some quick bash scripts to spam play his tracks.
Fantastic. And,
yeah, that's awesome. Now, if you actually had some tracks that weren't complete shit, you probably could have gotten away with that a lot longer and actually made some money. I'm not sure if it would have, maybe not a lot of money, but, you know, beer money.
Money's money, dude.
I'm just obviously trying to decide if it's worth the time.
I think it's a brilliant idea, man.
Ain't no party like a Korean workers' party.
That is the shit right there.
Yeah.
I give him 10 out of 10 for originality and 10 out of 10 for the comedy factor as well.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to do this shit, might as well have fun with it, right?
Right.
So... All right, next story up is from Ars Technica, and pretty much the moment this thing dropped, the entire internet sent it to me. like, everyone sent me this. Psychros had emailed it to me, like, within 15 minutes of me catching it. So, it was actually pretty funny. 3 years ago, security consultant Dragos Ryu was in his lab when he noticed something highly unusual. His MacBook Air, which had just installed a fresh copy of OS X, spontaneously updated the firmware that helps it boot. Stranger still, when Ryu then tried to boot the machine off a CD-ROM, it refused. He found the machine could delete data and undo configuration changes with no prompting. He didn't know it then, but the odd firmware update would become a high-stakes malware mystery that would consume most of his waking hours. I hate the way this thing's written. I seriously thought about rewriting the whole damn article so I could read it better on the air. In the following months, Ryu observed more odd phenomena that seemed straight out of a science fiction thriller. A computer running OpenBSD also began to modify its settings and delete data with explanation or prompting. His network transmitted data specific to the internet's next-generation IPv6 networking protocol, even though computers were supposed to have IPv6 completely disabled. Strangest of all was the ability of infected machines to transmit smaller amounts of network data with other infected machines, even with their power cords and Ethernet cables unplugged. He's talking about laptops. he's not talking about off computers transmitting to each other. And Ethernet cables unplugged and their Wi-Fi and Bluetooth cards removed. Further investigation soon showed that the list of affected operating systems included multiple variants of Windows and Linux. So at first they thought they were totally owned, so they rebuild all their systems, and it keeps happening. In the intervening 3 years, Ryu said the infections have persisted almost like a strain of bacteria that's able to survive the extreme antibiotic therapies. Within hours or weeks of wiping an infected computer clean, the odd behavior would return. Most visible signs of contamination is machine's inability to boot off a CD, but other more subtle behaviors can be observed when using tools such as process monitor. And another intriguing characteristic, in addition to jumping air gaps designed to isolate infected or sensitive machines from other network computers, the malware seemed to have self-healing capabilities. We had an air gap computer that just had its firmware reflashed and a fresh disk drive installed and zero data on it, installed from a Windows system CD, Ryu said. At one point, we were editing some of the components of our registry editor got disabled. It was like, wait a minute, how can that happen? How can the machine react and attack the software that that we're using to attack it. This is an air gap machine, and all of a sudden, its search function in the registry editor just stopped working when we were using it to search for their keys. Over the past 2 weeks, Ryu has taken to Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus to document his investigative odyssey and share a theory that has captured the attention of some of the world's foremost security experts. The malware, Ryu believes, is transmitted through USB drives to infect the lowest levels of computer hardware. With the ability of a target computer's BIOS, UEFI, and other firmware standards, the malware can attack a variety of platforms, escape forms of detection, and survive most of attempts to eradicate it. He calls it bad BIOS, and what he thinks he has is he thinks he has a malware that's rewriting firmware on mainboards, like your BIOS and your EFI, but it's also rewriting firmware on flash drives so that it can spread to machines that aren't networked, and apparently it's hiding in pretty much anything it can write a firmware to. And then it gets weird. He also thinks it's communicating between infected machines that are near each other through computer speakers and microphones using high frequencies.
Oh.
Now, this article goes on and on and on, pretty much talking about how everything he thinks this malware is doing is possible. And it is entirely possible to rewrite firmware and drop viruses and put rootkits in there. It is possible to hide malware in the BIOS of a machine. Pretty much all this stuff has been done in a lab, even the high-frequency transmission and receives. I would be dubious about how well that would work because different sets of speakers would have variations in them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, not all laptop speakers are the same size. So I would be dubious of how well that works. But, I mean, he's got a bunch of respected guys following what he says. And Ryu is not, you know, he's fairly well respected in the network security industry. I mean, he runs a bunch of stuff. So, you know, he compares it to Stuxnet. And he goes into how a lot of his forensic tools, I'm not going to read the whole article because it's very long and kind of poorly written, but a lot of his forensics tools weren't detecting stuff like this because, you know, nobody has any kind of anti-malware for your PCI bus.
Is there any, is he pointing to any sort of delivery of payload, like how you get it?
Flash drives. He thinks it initially got in on a flash, he doesn't know where it came from, but he thinks it's spreading via infected flash drives.
Okay. So that's where it's originally, so don't go sharing your flash drives around.
Pretty much. I mean, and there have been guys who've done it in the lab where they've managed to rewrite the really low firmware of a flash drive to spread malware. I've done a much less serious version of it where I screwed around with a flash drive that would automatically drop keyloggers and then pop up a window saying you just got a keylogger installed. It was a project. But, it was kind of proving that it worked.
Yeah.
But, I could see the communication through the sound card. I mean, they have done high-frequency comms through standard PC hardware in the lab.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's all... You know, this is malware that's 3 years old, and some of this stuff is pretty new research. So, I don't know. I mean, he's calling it bad BIOS, and the article's everywhere. It could be real. I mean, there's plenty of... I'm not saying it's not real. I'm just... I'm wondering if he's got some kind of a combination of stuff. You know what I mean? But he definitely observed traffic moving between machines... And the only way he could make it stop was to unplug the speakers.
A coincidence.
Yeah. So
maybe. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I'm wondering if he's had a couple of different kinds of malware and he thinks it's all the same thing, or if he's got somebody just really screwing with him. But, I mean, the guy's legit. I mean, I don't think he's making anything up for publicity.
No.
But...
got nothing to gain, man. Too many people check.
Yeah. So it's just, I mean, maybe he stumbled into the Stuxnet variation or something. I don't know. But It's out Remember. There, and it's big enough news that I kind of had to talk about it.
I look at it like this, man. My flash drive's like my cock. I don't just go sticking it in any port.
That's pretty good advice, actually.
Oh, I'm deadly serious, dude. I've got one flash drive that I use on anything outside, but it never goes to my main machine.
Right.
It just goes to my burner, well, my laptop. That thing gets reinstalled constantly. But, yeah, I wouldn't go plugging my outside one into anything system critical, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I've got a couple of VMs I do something similar with, but it's not... I mean, the one on my keychain, it only hits systems I trust.
I just can't wait till we get, like, the AIDS of computer virus.
You know, we've had that.
Fucking spreads through everything, man. I mean, really, really malicious. Starts bringing down some serious shit.
Oh, we've had that. we've had so much shit go down. Sasser and Nimda back in the day, man.
Yeah, way back. Need another good one. Something that fucks up mobile phones, man. Especially iPhones.
There's been some... My favorite iPhone one was the original iPhone, and I think up through, I'm wanting to say the 3S, the default root password on an iPhone was Alpine. So anybody who had rooted it and turned on things like SSH, which a lot of the rooting programs would automatically turn on, people were figuring out that SSH was exposed also over the cellular networks.
Ooh.
So my favorite iPhone virus was nothing more than an SSH bot that would get in, change your background to Rick Astley, change your ringtones to Never Gonna Give You Up, and... Yeah, because it got in through people who had rooted their phones and used the SSH password that nobody ever bothered to change. So,
that's great.
Yeah. But, yeah, I knew the whole thing was a prank just to make a point.
Good prank, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm just looking forward to the day that something so bad gets out and it just fucks up shit, man, that it makes news. You know, companies are going to go broke from it. And people are going to take security serious after that.
You get a good hack against I don't know, NASDAQ or something. That'll do it.
Yeah.
So
there's your dream job, working security on the NASDAQ computers.
I don't know that I want that job. That would be such a headache.
Dude, can you imagine the pressure?
Yeah, I can actually. Because a lot of those kind of systems, the security office's job is not to secure the systems. It's to have somebody to fire when the system gets hacked.
Yeah, pretty much. You're a token employee at that point.
Yeah. So, all right, let's do the next one here. This one's from Torrent Freak. This week, the RIAA submitted a new list of notorious websites to the U.S. government, sites that they label would like to see disappear. The Pirate Bay has also made it onto the list, no surprise there, and the RIAA points out that despite the criminal convictions of its founders, the site continues to operate. The identities of the current administrators of the site remain a mystery to the music industry group. Gee, I wonder why. The true operators of the site remain unknown, the RIAA writes. The convicted individuals claimed the site is owned by a company based in the, Shalaces? Shy Chili's? No idea how to say that word. Although no evidence has been proved. Interestingly, the RIAA also brings up the fact that the Pirate Bay is now accepting donations through the cryptocurrency Bitcoin and Litecoin. This apparently complicates law enforcement's efforts to track down and seize the funds of the Torrent site. In April of 2013, the site started accepting donations from the public by Bitcoin, a digital currency which operates using peer-to-peer technology, the RIAA notes. There's no central authority or banks involved, which make it very difficult to seize or trace Bitcoin funds. In May of 2013, the site also started accepting Litecoin, another peer-to-peer-based internet currency. So they're bitching that Bitcoin works outside of their systems, so they can't control it.
Oh, nothing.
I love it. Bitcoin does indeed make it harder to seize funds, as law enforcement would need to access the computer where the wallet is kept. However, tracking where the PayPal donations go isn't all that hard. In fact, transactions are visible to the public, and we can today reveal where some of the Pirate Bay donations went. In total, the Pirate Bay has raised close to 100 Bitcoin spread over two addresses, which is roughly $20,000 at the current exchange rates. 100 Bitcoins. Is that math right? I thought Bitcoins were worth about 100 bucks each. Huh.
That sucks, so...
I think their math might be a bit off. I'm not sure there. A quick look at the current wallet shows that the Pirate Bay received 64 Bitcoins, which were all spent elsewhere. As can also be seen below, most recently 8.97 Bitcoins were spent on a fundraiser for a public audit of the open source encryption software TrueCrypt. Before that, part of the donations were spent on a charity rally from Dover to Mongolia. Of course, Bitcoin addresses can also be used anonymously, so it's not always possible to identify or trace the recipients. So,
Bitcoin won't be around much longer. Don't worry.
Yeah, I don't know.
American Fed is looking to have it outlawed.
I know they're not particularly fond of it.
Nope, they don't want it around anymore.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we can't control that shit. So,
well, that's fundamentally one of the big things that's going on right now is control over international currency trading. America is really losing its grip, and it's starting to get hyper aggressive towards anybody creating their own currency outside that is threatening them.
Yeah.
So, they'll either make it just, you won't be able, I don't know, like, well, Bitcoin got their first ATM in Canada this week.
Yes, they did.
So maybe it'll just be illegal in America.
I think that was, yeah, that was one of the stories I nixed. I think. Let me scroll down a little bit. Yeah, I nixed that one. I did initially, in one of the earlier drafts of the notes, I did have the Bitcoins.
I watch a lot of the financial shows, and it's been a big buzz talk lately on how Bitcoin will be under threat from the Fed next year as they're drafting legislation to get rid of it.
I'm not surprised at all.
No, either am I. So, because everybody knows that there's a massive, verbal war going on between America, the EU, Japan, and China right now over currency trading and who's going to be the dominant currency in 2020.
As long as it's not China, because they've screwed with their currency value so much.
Yeah, I don't know what... No, I think China needs to value their currency correctly, but if they do, it'll pretty much send the working class back down to the lower class again.
That's true.
And hyperinflation and stuff like that. And also, too, it would cause the greenback just to crash out like there's no tomorrow. As well as the yen, the EU and the pound would probably come up after all that. And hell, no one wants the resurgence of Europe.
Well, you know, I was getting ready to say, if we had to replace the dollar as the world reserve currency with something else, the EU would be the next best choice. At least that one's moderately fair. And they're gamed all the hell too, so I mean it's not that much better. But
well, I just don't trust. Well, then again, how can you trust the European currency when there's seven faceless people that weren't elected control of money?
You can't trust any currency.
And then the Fed is run by a bunch of corporates that aren't elected either.
Yeah, no, all currency is fucked with. I mean, that's not even in question. I was just thinking the euro would be the closest to the dollar as far as how it's managed and the systems of it. So if the system was switched from the dollar to the euro, at least the world wouldn't completely burn down.
It would come pretty close, because the minute that happened, America would have to, launch a massive strike against Europe.
Nah, they'd bomb China anyways. It's like, that's who the plans are for. I mean, we're not going to change just because it turned out we were wrong on which currency the world switched to. So
I don't know. It's in financial circles. It's a bit like, are you an atheist, a Jew, a Christian, Coptic Christian? You know, which dollar is your god? You know, which one are you backing as the one true dollar? For the world currency going ahead after 2020.
And whichever one I can use to pay a hooker is going to be my answer on that one. So,
dude, if it all goes to shit, I'll be giving it away for free.
Do the hookers accept it, then it's currency. If they don't accept it, then it's not. I mean, that's it right there, isn't it?
Dude, hookers will accept anything. It's, will my drug dealer take this?
That one's good, too.
Yep. If your drug dealer's taking that cash, then that is the cash to get behind.
There you go. So, next story up is from Ars Technica. Facebook is considering collecting yet more data from users in the form of tracked mouse movements, according to a report from the Wall Street Journal Wednesday. Your scrolls, hovers, highlights, your right clicks, Facebook wants them all. It's not uncommon for websites to minutely track the items that users click on to see how they interact with different pages. A heat map of a page can show where people end up clicking, giving sites an idea of how users' eyes travel and parse information there. But Facebook's tracking would be another level of tracking entirely. According to the Wall Street Journal, Facebook will be paying attention to the areas the cursor lingers over, even without a click or any other interaction. So, you know, moving your cursor over the page. This seems like a bit of a strange motion to track, as if users are out there lovingly tracing the facial profiles of their family members or ex-crushes they are likely, or they might do on a photograph. But there's meaning to be had. Facebook will have it. In addition to tracking mouse movements, Facebook will also be gathering mobile data. It can't track finger lingers over a touchscreen, thankfully, but the company will be noting when, for instance, a user's newsfeed is visible at a given moment on the screen of his or her mobile phone. To do that means they will be tracking also when it's not visible. So if you've got a Facebook app on your device, you might want to uninstall that. I'm just going to say.
If you got a Facebook account... Wow, that would have been great, because last night I was watching some anime, and I don't generally go to this site that has the anime on it, and I pretty much had to go all over the entire page to find how to get to the next video.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, anime websites seem to be really good in going, next video, and they have a fucking button that you just click. Where when I'm watching, you can't see my air quotes here, say, movies... Sometimes it takes many hoops and a couple of pages to get through before you get to the movie. Where anime just seems to be click here, go play. I don't know. They got their shit wired, man.
The unlicensed sites usually do a hell of a lot better job of giving users what they want than the licensed ones do, strangely enough.
Yeah.
And the fact that Facebook wants to track your mouse movements over the page... I mean, you just think of the load that's going to put on your computer of it's constantly watching what pixel the mouse is over. That's, I mean, in Facebook, you ever open up Facebook in a tab, it already lags out the virtual machines I used to browse this shit. I don't even want to think about it with this running. So
yeah.
I have to give up on the virtual machine concept and just set up burner machines.
There you go, man. As I said, like when we're talking about the futuristic way it's going to be, you're going to have a burner machine to log on.
Oh, yeah. Preferably with a burner ISP as well.
That's good. Actually, yeah. So, I look into that now.
I'll get someone to you after the show about something.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, like, when I used to have mobile phones and that, I used to pay someone to go in and sign up for me and then give me the phone after it. Because they take, I don't know what it's like in the US there, but if you're just getting like a burner cell phone, you'll have to give name, home address, phone number, date of birth, everything, and you got to hand over your entire life.
They want you to do that in the store, but you can just buy them in cash and then go home, and when you go to turn the phone on, you'll stop to activate it. But as opposed to talking to somebody, you'll just be punching numbers in over the phone.
Yeah.
So it's fairly easy to...
ours is actually a written form, like, say, for a gun license or something. They fill the paperwork out, and they have to double-check your ID, and you need 3 forms of ID with photo on it and shit like that.
I don't know, man. I thought buying a shotgun was easier than getting a cell phone, truthfully. I'm not even right. Kidding.
I got a conversation there. Well, I might go and get a second ISP under a different name.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to do it. That's not actually the method I was thinking, but anyways. So I was actually thinking of one-time credit cards, you know, the Visa gift card kind of thing, and VPNs, which would effectively do the same thing.
And bugger it, why bother? I'm just going to go into my next-door neighbor's Wi-Fi.
There you go. All right, next story up is from the Washington Post. The National Security Agency has secretly broken into the main communications links that connect Yahoo and Google data centers around the world, according to documents obtained from former NSA leaker contractor Edward Snowden, and by interviews with knowledgeable officials. By tapping those links, the agency has positioned itself to collect at will from hundreds of millions of user accounts, many of them belonging to Americans. You know, okay, yeah, NSA has tapped the fiber links between Google and Yahoo's data centers, basically giving the NSA access to it. I'm not even going to read the rest of the damned article because it's not even what I want to talk about. Yeah, Google was pissed about it and Yahoo's pissed about it, and they were confused because they were letting them in through Prism isn't anyway, so why the hell were they getting into the systems? But you know what? I don't even care about that anymore. What I want to know is, so I'm assuming that Snowden gave everything he had to reporters and then got the fuck out of the States, right? I mean, he hasn't been sitting here just, you know, holding on to this massive stuff and then slowly doling it out to the media every couple of weeks. I mean, no.
No, he gave it to a BBC reporter.
Yeah, I mean, he gave all of it to a BBC reporter.
Yeah, so who's that means this been threatened by the UK government now. If he does not stop releasing this data, he will be jailed.
Well, I mean, I don't understand why he didn't just release it all at once. I mean, he's they're slowly doling it out to keep the news story going. I mean, this thing's been
going
on
for weeks.
It's to
keep him safe.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
While more and more keeps coming out. Well, look at the WikiLeaks dump. How many of us had, you know, the 70, 80 hours to sit down and comb through, what was it, gig and a half worth of shit? And you just got bored. So at least with this, they're getting more and more damning stories, and the punches just keep coming. Like,
well,
I can't wait for the last one. What is the last one? Is it going to be that George W. Bush was actually eating children? Because it just seems to get more fucking ridiculous every time. I'm getting angry now.
It's just, this whole thing just keeps going. It's like this perfect media manufactured thing. Nobody's actually got it outside of the media. I mean, you'd think they would have at least dropped it to WikiLeaks as well so that the whole thing could be out there in an archive somewhere. And then as they go through it, of course, they do the news stories. But no, they're doling it out slowly. And if this reporter thinks, oh, I've left it with a few people, and if you kill me, it's going to get released. But they're releasing it anyways. So if I was in charge of NSA, I would have had him shot already. I mean, that's just me.
Yeah, I wouldn't be driving home the same while even taking a car every day, you know, if I was the reporter. But it's going to keep coming out, man. Like, there's more to come yet.
Oh, absolutely. Of course there's more to come. It's eventually going to get to the point where it's like, yes, they actually were watching the security cameras in the bathrooms. And they know what you look like naked. I mean, it's like, yeah, the whole naked body scanners at the airport, totally saved those.
Yep.
And of course, that stuff's going on there. It's just the timing on these is too perfect. I don't know. I think there's something else going on. I don't think it's what it is.
I know Mr. Snowden went to work for the first time today.
Yeah, he got a IT support job for a
Russian
telecom. Yeah.
Good luck, Russia.
Well,
hopefully you don't have anything sensitive there.
You know, they're putting him in a corner office and giving him busy work just so they can say they employ him.
Yeah, that's pretty much. And I'm thinking, like, nothing's even. He's just playing Angry Birds on a tablet all day.
I'm sure he's not doing anything. I mean,
yeah. All right, here's your $75,000 a year and your free World of Warcraft account.
I like that in the chat room. They just got him going around fixing the printers. They have him answering the phone. Have you tried turning it on and off again?
You can almost see him getting as, like, depressed as the dude from the IT crowd. Yeah. Have you tried turning it on and off again? He's going to be this angry, broken man living in a shitty country, freezing his ass off. No, I don't think they'll even let him near a computer, dude, let alone a printer.
Like, nope, here's your screwdriver.
Here's your Rubik's Cube and bucket of silly putty.
Actually, you know what they probably, you know what they honestly probably did? It's like, your title is IT support. Here's your mop.
Oh, man.
So, maybe I might be overplaying that a bit, but I can't see them giving him any real work.
He's gonna be the guy from the IT crowd, the goth guy who just sits there and watches the lights blink all day in the server room. You watch this green light. If it ever goes out, report it upstairs, Mr. Snowden. Yes, yep. Sir.
Seriously, they hired him so they could say they're employing Snowden. And I don't know. If I was running a business with somebody like that, he wouldn't get any real work. I mean, somebody's making a political move there. That's not a manager making a decision. That's somebody playing games. So next story up is from the BBC. I think Sard sent me this one on Skype, but Cycros also sent it to me, or Twab sent it to me. I don't know. I got submitted a bunch of stories this week. It sounds like something out of a James Bond movie. GPS bullets that can track the location of a suspect's car. The bullet is designed to make high-speed chases safer, enabling the authorities to track suspects without having to risk theirs or others' lives. And in true spy fashion, the system works by hitting a button inside a police car that triggers a lid to pop up, releasing a bullet that shoots out and sticks to the car in front. The system, dubbed Star Chase, is already in use in 4 U.S. states, Iowa, Florida, Arizona, and Colorado. And the firm behind it is now keen to get the system in the UK. It costs $5,000 to install, and each bullet costs $500, which actually sounds about right for a little GPS battery and transmitter. Once a bullet is connected to a car, the police can stop the chase. They can track and pinpoint a subject's vehicle location and speed in near real time. This is an important tactic for police. We've already made a difference from rescuing little girls from human trafficking to stopping drivers under the influence, said Trevor Fishbach, president of Star Chase.
Oh, shit.
Something in your throat there, are you?
Oh, shit. We saved a little girl and stopped terrorism. Fucking go bullet in the front of a police. Are you fucking kidding? We mounted these twin 50 calibers on the police cruiser to stop these jaywalking bastards.
You think about how big these bullets have to be. I'm wondering how many you actually have to peg on a car because you know two or three of them aren't going to survive the trip.
Yeah. Like, just the impact alone and the projectile being fired into the soft sheet metal. Yeah.
How many of them aren't going to stick, though? How many of them are like, especially some of these cars, they'll just punch right through that layer and fall down to the road. I mean,
exactly. Imagine hitting a Kia or a Hyundai. Like, that shit is like paper on the out. You're going to kill the passenger or the driver.
Okay? Oh, well, yep. Yeah, well, oh, girl, we dude, saved. I've just got a business for us. Put the bullet through her head.
I've just got a business for us, man. Kevlar trunks.
Oh.
Kevlar trunks, man. Inside lining.
But they want a black box in the car anyway, so, I mean, then they won't even have to shoot it. You just turn it on. So...
anybody who thinks you can't track a modern vehicle today is kidding himself.
Yeah, what do you think OnStar is? So, but yeah, they're shooting GPS trackers out of, and it probably is fairly similar to a shotgun barrel that they've mounted James Bond style on police cars.
Dude, this is like, wow. Yeah, the car swerves just in time to, as he fires and it shoots a pedestrian or something. Or it malfunctions at like a children's parade. Why don't they just stick a giant fucking harpoon on a specially modified vehicle?
Because that would just be too badass and you'd have too many people think it's a zombie apocalypse. Although I am waiting for them to take the super soakers and fill them up with the bear guard they use to hose down college kids so they don't even have to get out of the car to hit the, you know.
Just fill up the inside of the car with it. Band of foam. All right, we're not going to arrest you, but it'll take you long enough time to get out of this car. You may die. That's going to save the taxpayer a lot of money imprisoning you.
But, yeah, so now they're going to shoot your car with the GPS tracker. So that's fantastic. It's actually pretty cyberpunk. I think they did that in Ghost in the Shell, didn't they?
Yeah, that tracking
trackers in the cars. Yeah,
had him in his handgun, I think.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's right. He shot him out of his revolver. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And they bitched at him for using the wrong gun. I remember that now.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched.
I like that one. Yeah, the police should have an Ed 209 by now. That'd be
awesome. I want an Ed 209 with like, you know, a beer seat on top. You know what I mean? Like, you just sit there and watch that. Ooh, that'd be revenue right there. You know, the Ed 209 goes on law enforcement. And then you've got the little box on the top that you can sell tickets to people sit there and watch law being enforced.
Yes. As long as it's got his little piggy scream for when it goes down. That's all I care about.
Yeah, I can see Stairs being a formidable opponent there. So,
That's why it's got twin howitzers on the back of it. You run upstairs, it's all over.
All right, next one up is from The Consumerist and is hilarious. First, Dell told them to try cleaning it with a soft cloth. That didn't work. Then they suggested compressed air, but as the complaints of laptops with keyboards and trackpads that smelled exactly like cat urine piled up, Dell was forced to admit that there was a problem. Dell Latitude E6430U laptops manufactured before October smell strongly of cat urine. How much like cat urine? Apparently, the laptop is basically unusable, and innocent cats are in danger of being blamed. From the Dell forums, I almost started the week with my cat at the vet getting the needle, but after checking my bag, smelled fine. He was going to have his cat put to sleep because he thought the cat pissed on a laptop. And the kitchen table, the only place that the laptop wasn't in the bag, I can't blame the cat. So now I read this. Good gosh, it stinks. Yeah, who writes good gosh? And I have been blaming a new kitten who I swore was creeping into my closed backpack at night and magically only hitting the PC with a concentrated urine stream, which magically evaporated. Glad to hear I'm not alone. People see my smelling PC and think I was insane. And apologies to the cat. Dell has now apologized and offered replacement laptops to users with the cat pee version. Apparently a manufacturing problem. Rather than a biological agent, is responsible for the distinctive owner. Steve B., official representative for Dell on the issue of cat pee scented computing, says we do know at this time that this smells absolutely not urine or any other type of biological material. The parts have been tested and we've confirmed this 100%. The smell is caused by a manufacturing process which has now been changed, and we are confident that the issue is resolved and all new E6430Us currently shipping. The next step for owners of the special litter box edition, you have to actually get it replaced.
So you're telling me Dell have stopped using child labor now to put their computers together and they started to use cats?
Apparently.
Wow.
They had a whole line of laptops that sold so strongly of cat piss, people were taking their cats to the vet. I mean, that's
fantastic.
Yeah.
I love super responsible cat owner there. Yeah, Mittens did something wrong, so we had to kill it. You know, scratch the furniture, kill Mittens. Fuck it.
Man, some people are like that. It's like, yeah. You don't understand a cat if you have that mentality.
That'll learn it, you know.
So, I can see several cats getting neutered early because of that, or spayed or neutered early because of that. It's like, yeah, we were going to take them in next week, but we decided not to wait.
I just can't believe Dell's quality control didn't pick up that they smelt like cat piss.
Well,
or it's that poor.
Being where they're made, you think anybody noticed?
Yeah, I suppose. We assembled near the garbage dumps of New Delhi anyway.
All right, and the last story up I have is from Psychros and it's on the register.co.uk. Russian authorities have claimed that household appliances imported from China may contain tiny computers that seek out open Wi-Fi networks and then get to work sending spam and distributing malware. St. Petersburg news outlet Rosbalt reported last week that local authorities had examined kettles and irons and found 20 to 30 pieces of Chinese home appliance spy microchips that send some data to foreign servers. Just what data is being sent and where is not discussed, which had Vulture South thinking the report might be suspicious. A bit of digging suggests that this is legitimate. One source the story mentions, Gleb Palov of customs broker Panaport, can be found at the link we've popped into the company, or we popped in on the company's name. We've also been able to find this link to an appliance company called Sable Limited, which is the very name translation engines say is the employer of one Inokiy Fedorov, whose company found the bugged appliances. Next question. Could someone build a spam bot small enough to hide inside a kettle or iron? Well, we see no reason why not. The components are small and cheap enough. One last wrinkle. Could one convert Russia's 220-volt electricity supply to power a small electric device without frying it and without making an iron or kettle look rather odd? The answer is yes, all in a matter of tiny PCB transformers, which can be had for the job. Actually, those tiny transformers are actually kind of pricey, so it's interesting if this is really going on. The report says that the Wi-Fi, at least just one problem in the story. The fact that the report says the Wi-Fi slurper-enabled kit was detected because the appliances were overweight. Unless the appliances were being air freighted with a handful of grams, either way would not raise eyebrows. It's hard to imagine low-cost items like irons were considered worthy of a plane trip. We surmise that whoever made the killer kettles and infiltrated irons cobbled them together with... put them together, made their presence obvious. So... apparently in Russia, your average household appliance now has a little Wi-Fi chip in it and is sending spam.
Awesome.
So, as a precaution, you should tear apart every appliance you own and look for circuit boards you don't recognize.
Wife's going to kill me. Gotta go, Morps. Things to do.
Let me know what you find.
Well, I'm working on a washing machine next week, so I'll let you know how that goes.
So we found an arm chip and a Wi-Fi antenna in there, and
my god, a Pringles can as well. Fuck.
Why would you target Russia of all places with that? I just don't see. Maybe they have a whole bunch of open Wi-Fi, I don't know, but I thought Russia was I didn't think they had that much in the way of Wi-Fi. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'd say around like the major capitals and stuff like that would be pretty teched out by now.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's not teched out, but I thought they did most of their stuff on cell phones. I know most of Asia does that. So I thought Russia was similar in that they were mostly living on cell towers. I didn't think they... You're probably right. They probably, especially in the urban centers, they probably do have enough Wi-Fi for something like that to work.
Yeah.
So... all right, let's do this. I love the digital dojo where it sounds like somebody dropped something on their foot. I mean, so what I have is interesting. It's called retire-js, and it's on open.bekk.no/retire-js. What this thing is, well, just a slug from the website, there's a plethora of JavaScript libraries out there for use on the web and in the Node.js apps. They greatly simplify the development process, but also require us to stay updated on new library versions and security fixes. Using components with known vulnerabilities is now a part of the OWASP top 10, and insecure libraries can pose a huge risk for your web app. The goal of require.js is to help you detect libraries that have vulnerabilities. Now, he's got a couple of different SKUs of the software, but the one I was interested in is the Chrome extension. What it does is it scans a visited site for references to insecure libraries and then puts warnings in the developer console. It'll also throw up a little icon in the address bar. It's not intended to be enabled all the time, but rather something you enable when you want to access a site and see if it's got known vulnerabilities. So this thing is specifically looking for known vulnerable versions of JavaScript libraries, right? Most of these libraries are open source. So if you're a web dev, you can grab this plugin and test your own code and make sure that you don't have anything in there that's going to let somebody hack your web application very easily. If you're a bad guy or just, you know, bored, you can just leave the thing on all the time, test websites for known vulnerabilities, and if you happen to find one, Well, not only can you look up the library that's out of date, you can probably look at the patch that they're talking about and see what the vulnerability is. And since most of these are open source, you can just go pull it down and read it. I mean, it is JavaScript. So, you know, if you want a quick and easy way to start screwing with people's web apps, out of date Node.js stuff would probably be a pretty good way to do it. And since it's, like I said, it's all JavaScript, you can read the code. Most of it's open source, so you can just go get a copy of what they're running and see what's vulnerable. This is a great little tool for web devs, and it's an even better tool for people who like screwing with other people's JavaScript.
Nice.
So, you know, I mean, I'm not endorsing the idea of screwing with other people's websites to it. I'm just seeing that as being a big use of this. The author promotes it as a tool for web developers to test their own code, and you absolutely should. If you run a website, you should test your own code and make sure everything's kosher. But if not, well, at least you'll know how they got in. So,
sounds like it'd be really handy.
It can be. It can be, especially if you've, you know, if you're just curious about how some sites are put together. This thing can probably tell you what libraries they're using, because I mean, obviously, not everything's going to be up to date all the time. And in fact, you would argue that you would argue that most production systems probably should be a version or two behind anyways, as long as the software is being released regularly. I mean, if the code hasn't been updated in 10 years, you probably should be running the last released version. But yeah, if it's, you know, they're releasing every couple of months a patch, you probably ought to be a couple of patches behind just to catch regression.
Don't break.
Yeah, exactly. And I've done enterprise deployment. Trying to keep that many machines up to date at once sucks. So most people are pretty loath to touch their servers if they're not broken. So I imagine if you go playing with this tool, you're going to find plenty of websites with stuff that's out of date.
Interesting.
Anyways, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. I think we just recently tried to add a whole bunch of music we already had on the stream to the stream. So,
That one was caught before it happened.
Oh, okay.
There's a real vetting process so that doesn't happen. Because there's no way I'm spending an entire 2 fucking weeks, 4 hours a night, cleaning it up again.
Yeah.
Remember that? That was a great 2 weeks. Intact. Weeks.
Yeah. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday, Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays, IHN on Saturdays, The Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays, Let's Get Drunk every other Friday, so I think I'm due to do one tomorrow. We skipped the one 2 weeks ago because, one person was out hiding from aliens, and I wasn't feeling well, so I didn't feel like downing a whole bunch of alcohol, and so we're due for a Let's Get Drunk tomorrow. We also have Lore's Drunken Anime Show. I'm blanking on the exact name of that thing now. Drunken Anime Plot. That's right, Drunken Anime Plot. On the Fridays, we're not doing a Let's Get Drunk. So, you know, of course, you can shoot us feedback. We've got the IRC channel. We've got the Galaxy 15 Radio Sim on OS Grid. We've got the feedback forum. We have the subreddit. There's, the Galaxy 15 Radio site and the Twitter handle. I think I've hit everything I'm supposed to promote at the end of the show. I forget anything, are you, that you know of?
I'm not that I know of.
Yeah.
No, I think we're good.
So, worst case scenario, I believe Big Brother accepts TCP/IP via carrier pigeon. So, if it comes down to it, you can, do carrier pigeon to, care of Big Brother there. And that's all I've got. I'm going to hit play on this.
Actually, no, the carrier pigeons are out, man, because of that international doping scene of the cocaine and the racing pigeons.
Oh.
We're not accepting carrier pigeons anymore.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, drug addict pigeons.
So I'm going to hit play on this music now. Stay a while. Stay forever.